What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 54. Today we're going to be doing a rebuttal to What the Health. If you don't know, that's like a vegan propaganda film saying meat causes every disease under the sun, pretty much.
Yeah, but before we get to that, first we just want to let you guys know where you guys can find the podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, YouTube, and now Stitcher. And then we also just added this. We added a donate button at the bottom of our page on our website. It's on the homepage. Just scroll down towards the bottom. If you guys want to make a donation, we give you guys this podcast commercial-free, ad-free. So if you guys want to support the podcast, you guys like what you hear, please consider donating.
Yeah, thank you. Any amount, we really appreciate it. Help keep the podcast going. But yeah, before we get into this horrible movie and this horrible study, and honestly, I think I might cuss a lot on this podcast. I really do, because I've been reading this shit by myself, like, just fuming. But you know, it is what it is. Sorry, mom, in advance. I know my mom listens to this. But how's your week been going so far?
So good and bad. So last week I talked about how I've been trying to cut back on coffee. Mm-hmm. The last few days have not been going very well. Yeah. So I don't know if I've talked about this. I'm pretty sure I have. I have a race coming up. It's Mount Diablo, which is one of the hottest parts of the Bay Area. If it's anything like today, it's going to be about 105 out there.
Crazy hot.
No shade. The race starts at 8 in the morning. So no matter what, I'm going to be in the sun the entire race. I'll probably be ending 2, maybe 3 p.m. So like hottest part of the day, I'm going to be out there. It's a 31-mile race with... It's over a mile and a half in elevation gain and descent, which is going to... It's going to be pretty damn brutal.
So your first ultra, what was the elevation gain there?
6,700, which was a lot already. That was like 1.3 and a half miles.
So it's going to be a little bit more.
More and a lot hotter. Because that was in April and in Berkeley. And there was like going through kind of like a forest. So there's a lot of shade and stuff like that. Complete opposite.
So what are you doing to prepare?
I've just been doing a lot of running.
Okay.
So this weekend, I've been doing this almost every weekend. Is just splitting it up, like Saturday, do anywhere between 10 and 20 miles, then Sunday, doing anywhere between 10 and 20, and just making that total go up to 30. You could do some, like, heat training, but to me, I think that sounds like way too much stress on the body, and I'd rather just work on my fitness overall, and then, like, that'll just kind of deal with it.
And leave the stress for the day of.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, pretty much just being acclimated to the heat... Basically, you're just like a more proficient sweater. That's all it is.
You're just going to leak.
Yeah. If you run a lot, you're going to be a pretty proficient sweater. And what I like to do instead is I'll just sit in the sauna, get, you know, acclimated to that heat, just sitting there instead of trying to run my ass off in that heat too.
Yeah.
Because then, like, you know, that's, I talk about overtraining a lot. Mm-hmm. Running in 100 degree weather is a really good recipe for overtraining.
Very taxing.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, like just trying to squeeze in those long runs. This weekend we had, like, I had work Saturday, ran 12 miles right after I finished my run, had to make a quick dinner, then go to a housewarming party. So like all day Saturday, just running around. Sunday.
No, thank you, by the way. Yes. That's too much.
Sunday, woke up early. As soon as the gym opened, I was in the gym, ran 18 miles. Came home, made a quick breakfast. We had some friends come over. We went wine tasting. As soon as we were done wine tasting, we had to drive an hour, hour and a half to my fiance's, like, friend's house for a baby shower. I got back at, like, 10. So it was just, like, my sleep has been all out of whack. trying to cut out coffee has not been the easiest thing. So, like, you've been kind of struggling.
Oh, no. Like, I wouldn't do either of those things. Like, I don't want to be your friend that bad. And my wife's going by herself.
Like, yeah. I mean, that thought definitely crossed my mind. Yeah. But because of that, I've been snacking a little bit more, going for a little bit more sugary foods. I mean, I'm still way well under 100 grams of carbs a day. So I'm still probably keto, but just been kind of like reaching for those like sweet snacks instead of coffee.
Yeah.
I'd probably be better off just drinking the coffee.
Yeah, just give in.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'm hoping like this weekend should be more relaxed so I can kind of catch back up on sleep. And I have one more long run. It's going to be a 22-miler. It'll be hot. It won't be like Mount Diablo hot, but it'll be a nice little like training run.
Is this with your group?
Yeah, with my running group.
Okay, so up in Auburn?
Somewhere around there.
I bet Auburn's hot as shit too.
It is. It's not quite as hot as Mount Diablo. Okay. And there's some shade along the way. It's not going to be running on top of a volcano.
Yeah. You climbed to the top of that before, right?
Mount Diablo? Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah, I've never done that. Yeah.
So you like the first 4 miles is pretty flat. And then right after that, there's like a 4 mile race. So all the people that just want a nice easy run can do that one and then head back. No hill. And then after that is when you start going for the summit. You do the summit first, run around the top, and then if you are doing the 50K, you run back to the summit again.
That all sounds stupid.
And then you run back down.
Oh, my Lord. I mean, it's a challenge, no doubt.
Yeah. This is pretty much just to see if I'm prepared to do 100K in October. That's going to be like 63, 65 miles. But that has a strict cutoff point at 16 and a half hours. So I'm not sure if I can make that or not.
Okay.
The elevation's pretty similar between that one and the Mount Diablo race. Just like a little bit more, but it's spread out over twice the distance, so it shouldn't feel as bad.
Yeah, way more gradual.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of like, all right, if I can make this one in a pretty good time, then...
Just extrapolate it.
Yeah, then I'm prepared to do that one.
Okay. No, that's cool, man. That is. Well, I mean, my week... Yeah, it's funny. Last week, you were doing good last week. I was doing shitty. Like, my back was all beat up. I wasn't training. And honestly, this week has been worse. Like, legitimate has been way worse. And
did you re-injure it?
No. Well, I mean, not really. I don't even know if I was going to go into all this, because it's going to be like a 20-minute story of me bitching about myself. But yeah, I guess just to make it short. So, last week, Wednesday, I had already taken maybe like 6 days off of training because I injured my back. Like, way worse than it's been in years. But I did recover. I trained Thursday and felt fine Thursday. Real light training session. So, for whatever reason, Thursday... Like, you know, between diets, I normally like to do some sort of extended fast. And I haven't done an extended fast in a while. So, I was like, you know what? Just out of the blue, I was like, I'm going to do a 3-day fast. So, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Easy. Not a problem. So, Thursday, roll through it. Easy. Friday, I kind of wake up. Well, I guess it was Thursday night. I decided... On Friday, I'm going to do a dry fast. So it means a whole day with no water. And well, you've heard of that, right?
Yeah, what made you want to do that?
Well, so there's somebody we're working with who was really struggling to lose weight, right? And before I knew all the reasons behind it, the only, like, ace in my hole was going to be a dry fast. Because the science behind it is your body needs, like, you can lay in bed all day, like, not move a muscle, and you'll probably burn around 2,000 calories. That's, like, just your base metabolic rate. But your body has a need for water. So you'll burn more calories just sitting in bed and requiring your body to replenish water as well. So a dry fast is a way to kind of enhance the fat loss during fasting. And there are, have you seen people have dry fasting in their regimens?
I've seen it, and I know... That's kind of how camels can go so far.
Yeah, it's the fat, it's not the water.
Yeah, it's all the fat that they have on their back, and one of the byproducts of glycolysis is water production.
Yeah.
So that's where, like, burning more energy to create water comes into play.
Yeah, at the end of the electron transport chain is water. Yeah, exactly. So it creates two demands for you to be burning fat. So that's the thought process behind it. But something I always say is I'll never do something, or I'll never recommend something I haven't done myself, right? And thank God, me and this person, we got everything figured out. We're not going to have to do a dry fast. But still, it was on my mind that, you know what, eventually this might come up again. I should do a dry fast, you know? So I try it. And by about midday Friday, maybe like 1 o'clock, my back, like the middle of my back, starts getting in like muscle spasms. And it's kind of light at first. I don't even really recognize it because I've never really had muscle, like painful muscle spasms before. I was like, I don't know why my back hurts, man. It was fine. Like, I was like, there's no way I re-injured it. Like, I was kind of mad at myself. Gets worse. Gets worse. So after maybe an hour, I leave work. I tell my boss, yo, I'm leaving. Like, deuces. I didn't even say, because I could tell it was getting so bad. It felt like somebody was, like, electrocuting me. And I was, like hunching over in pain. I was like, there's no way I'm going to be in the middle of this damn place on the floor. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got to leave before this shit gets too bad. So I leave. I don't even come home because I can't drive. I go to my mom's, who is like 5 minutes from my house. I'm laying in bed. I get this heater, like this little heat pad under my back. I take some Advil, and maybe like 3 hours later, everything's cool. It was a painful 3 hours. And I drive home later in the evening. It happens again that night. So I'm laying in bed, can't sleep. I still have some muscle relaxers left over from the week prior. Took those. Tried to go back to sleep, couldn't go to sleep. So this happened like 12, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., 5 a.m. I woke up every hour. So I really didn't sleep. I was kind of just in and out of a stupor. And see, I told you this is going to be a long story. It is. And I'm just getting, this is just a fucking tip. But so after maybe like another hour, I get up, I take a pain pill. Nothing. After an hour, I take some Advil, nothing. So about 5 a.m., my wife gets up to go to the gym. I'm like out of my mind, sweating in bed. I'm like, you know what? I'm just getting up. I'm not sleeping. Like, I just get up. I come out to the living room, sit in the chair. I am high as a kite because I had been taking so much shit overnight just trying to knock out. Like, I was like, please just knock out and let me sleep. Didn't happen. Well, guess what we had to do that day? Go to a wedding. Guess where we didn't go? The wedding.
So this whole time, did you drink water at all?
Oh, yeah. As soon as I got to my mom's, all the water, the salt I could have.
Okay.
So I think that's what kind of helped me. I just rehydrated.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And it's probably like some sort of electrolyte imbalance.
100%. That's what I think initiated it.
Especially because you take so much salt on a daily basis anyway. Your body's really just not used to that.
No. And my kidneys are not used to really retaining salt, I think. Yeah. So I think I dumped way more salt than I ever thought I could. You know what I'm saying? So it took me a while to get it all back. So by, what is it, Saturday morning, back feels fine, but I'm just messed up. And not like a good high, like, hey, bro, what's up? I mean, like a dope fiend lean in and out of consciousness, like, not fun.
Lack of sleep and lots of pain pills.
Yes, yeah. You know, it, like, was not comfortable at all. So we missed the church part of the wedding, because I just couldn't go. There's no way. Like, I couldn't even fake a smile. But, I mean, it is what it is.
You probably would have fallen asleep during the service, too, or something.
Yeah, like, I couldn't even say hi to people. Like, it was just, it wasn't happening, so... We go to, it's around 6 p.m. I was like, all right, I get up, I take a cold shower, I take some caffeine, and I'm like, all right, I'm starting to feel normal again. Let's go, right? Nothing hurts. So I'm like, all right, we'll go to the reception. Get all dressed up, head to the reception, and maybe like 2 hours into it, my chest starts hurting. I mean, like legit, I thought, like chest pains.
I'm like, this is completely new.
Oh, bro, I'm falling apart. I don't know what's going on. And it gets to a point where people are starting to notice me, that I'm not like, hey, what's up? I'm kind of like, I kind of like went back into my zone, like, what the shit is going on with me, right?
Yeah.
And so I actually get up, I leave like the little, what is it, like a hall, and I go outside, and I'm like, oh, this ain't working. But I knew it really wasn't a heart attack, because it just hurt when I moved. So I knew some sort of like strain, maybe through my ribs or it was really through my left pec.
You know, so like your intercostal muscles, like something. The muscles in between your ribs?
Yes. Okay. That's because if I was really having a heart attack, I would have been scared. But I knew it was something with the muscle, right?
And usually that's like referred pain. You don't feel like your heart hurt. You feel like your left arm hurt, something like that.
Yeah, if you're really having a heart attack. Yeah, exactly. But I texted my wife and I was like, yo, we got to go because this ain't getting any better. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got to go home. So we were even at the reception for a couple hours. Like, it was like a flash in the pan. We get home, chest is hurting like crazy, barely sleep that night, because I can't even, like, move in bed, because you don't realize what muscles you use until they really hurt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't roll side to side, I couldn't do nothing. I was like a newborn baby. I was using my wife as, like, leverage, like, using her to pull myself. And, and honestly, my chest still hurts. It's getting way better, though. It hurts, honestly, when I laugh. But, so I haven't trained since then. So that's going on another week. This is probably the longest I haven't trained in a very long time. And I decided, so I'm not training, I'm going to fast again. So this is day two of a fast. And I decided I'm going to do a 5-day fast. So it's going to be Monday. I'm going to eat Saturday. Well, I'm gonna see how I feel Saturday. If I feel good enough to work out, I'll work out then eat. If I don't feel good enough to work out, I'm just gonna keep running this fast until I feel like recovered.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's gonna be minimum 5 days. I've never done 5 days before, but
So how long did your fast last
time? I lasted 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah, I got through it. Well, I got through 72 hours. Okay. But it was rough. And so even this week, like, no training. I am waking up and doing an hour of cardio in the morning on the bike, but that's just for, like, my mental sanity. Like, it keeps my morning routine in place, where I get up, I listen to music, I break a sweat. But me not lifting weights for this long is weird. Me fasting this much in this short of time is weird. Like, I don't know how much weight I've lost, but it's a ton, and I can tell. But I'm not too worried about it, because once I start eating again, I'll bounce back.
So have you been taking, like, upping the magnesium, or did you do that like the first couple days?
Not upping the magnesium, but just taking it. So I did up the salt shots.
Okay.
So now it's pre and post workout and before bed. So it's pretty much 3 teaspoons a day.
Okay.
And every time I do that, I do magnesium. Yeah, so I guess the magnesium's up 50%.
Okay.
Yeah, and I feel fine now. Like I said, a little pain, but nothing crazy, nothing to be worried about. And I don't know, man. I just want to recover. I just want to start training again. This has been, I'm so used to, like, literally everything going perfect. So when shit like this happens to me, it does not affect me well. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I hate it. I really do. I don't know how normal people live like this shit all the time.
This is a bad time to be, like, stuck doing that, too, because it's, like, 105 right now outside. So you can't even do anything outdoors.
Can't even go
nowhere. You're stuck inside right now.
I am, yeah. So it sucks, man. So I've had, honestly, a real, real rough few weeks. And I don't know. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I am bouncing back. But I don't know. It sucked. It really has. But luckily, all this time I've had at home, not doing anything, not working, I have had time to look into this movie and all, like, the claims it makes. And let me tell you, this movie, What the Health, is complete trash.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think this might be, if it's not the most popular documentary, like, health documentary on Netflix, it's top three. People bring that up to me all the time, and I hate it. I'm just like, I've never watched it, but I've just heard so many people's, like, rebuttals against it. So, like, I know it's just straight trash.
Yeah, and you know what it promotes, and you already know what it promotes is trash.
Yeah, every single argument they bring up is based off of, like, very flawed science, like the one that we're about to get into today. And there's just so much healthy user bias all over it. And I'm not big on documentaries. They don't take a close enough look at the science for me to really get interested in it.
Yeah, because they can. We talked about that with, I think it was... Was it last week we talked
about?
Yeah,
with the fat documentary.
Yeah, fat documentary. And they don't have enough time to really do deep dives.
Yeah, we're both past that point where it's like, oh, hey, this claim is interesting. It's like, no, show me the science.
Yeah.
I need to see the studies. I need to see the like, your results, the way that you formed your study. I need to see all that. Is it epidemiological? Or are you actually doing animal testing? Are you doing randomized control testing? That's the gold standard. They never do those.
Never. No.
They're too expensive. And even if they do them, it's only with like 5 people. So it's not really that valuable.
Yeah. Super small sample size.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's crazy. And have you seen the movie The Magic Pill?
Yes. I watched it and then I like listened to it as well.
Okay. So I like that movie. So if you do have Netflix, which everyone does, I can get behind the movie The Magic Pill for the most part way more than any like movie like this. What the hell?
Jason Fung's in that one, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so I knew, again, like, Nina Teicholz is in it, Jason Fung is in it. The guy who runs DietDoctor.com is in it, and that's a real good website. It's a resource I've used before. So the people in the website I vouch for as far as I know they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
So it's just a pretty much a low-carb movie. It's good. So I recommend that. So it's called The Magic Pill. Check that out.
Spoiler alert, there is no magic pill.
Pretty much, yeah. It's up to you, man, to regain your health. And it's going to be hard, but you should do it. But yeah, getting into this, the film creator is a guy named Kip Anderson. And guess what? Before this movie, he sets it up like a real, almost like a horror movie. It's like black and white shadows, people like scared. And he was already a vegan before he made this movie. So guess what his conclusion promoted? Or concluded?
That everybody should go carnivore.
Yeah, how about the exact opposite of that, right? That everyone should go vegan, like of course this dude said, or came up with that conclusion.
So his conclusion matches hypothesis? Okay.
Crazy. Yeah, we haven't heard that before. And he's actually the creator of the movie Cowspiracy. So we touched on Cowspiracy a little bit on podcast 49. And Cowspiracy, again, pretty much blames cows for everything. It comes from mainly one bad study called Livestock's Long Shadow. That's from a 2006 FAO report blaming cattle for 18% of total greenhouse gas emissions. And Cowspiracy took this data and manipulated it even more to claim cows cause 50% of total greenhouse gas emissions. That's not true. That data was never good at all. The initial report was complete trash. If you want to learn more about it, please go check out episode 49, and there's timestamps so you can see where I actually talked about that argument. But cows, are cows bad for the environment?
They've been on this planet for a very long time, so if they're killing this planet, I think they would have done it by now.
Yeah, if they're killing the planet, they're not doing a good job.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, step it up, cows. Yeah. So, in total, What the Health makes 37 health claims. And they range from stuff like cows, milk, and cheese are just pus. They make claims that the meat, egg, and dairy industry are just like big tobacco, or that one egg is like smoking five cigarettes.
One egg is five cigarettes?
Yep, that's one of their big ones from the Dr. Michael Kreger. I'm sure you've heard of him.
But what, like, how is it five cigarettes?
Oh, it's not. That's a trick.
But Michael, like, what health claim are they claiming with that?
See, here's the problem. This dumbass movie made so many health claims, and I text you this, so I went down this rabbit hole, okay, 37, let me do this. It would have taken me and this podcast like a week to cover every claim. It really would, because right now I'm only going to cover one, with the meat and cancer. I legit think this podcast is going to be an hour and a half, if not 2 hours. This one claim, this one rebuttal to one shitty claim is going to be longer than the entire movie making 37 claims. Does that show you the strength of the argument?
So they just kept just lying. Hopefully,
boom, boom, boom.
Hopefully you don't have the time to check any of them.
Exactly, okay. Yeah. That's exactly what they did. So none of these claims hold a movie at all. So 96% of the data cited do not support the claims made in this film. The film does not cite a single rigorous randomized controlled trial on humans supporting its arguments. What did you just say? What are those tests called?
That's the gold standard.
Gold standard. Not one in this movie. Instead, the world, What the Health, presents a great deal of weak epidemiological data, case studies on one or two people, or other inconclusive evidence. Like, there's no strong evidence for any of this shit. At all. But no one's going to actually look into it. You know what I'm saying? Well, I will. Straight up. And sorry, whatever that dude's name is. What's his... See, I want to cuss right there. No cuss. Kip Anderson. Sorry, Kip Anderson, but I'm going to go through your shit with a fine-tooth comb. But I do want to talk about real quick the way, before we get into the meat and the cancer, the way the results of the studies were reported, and especially the way they're outlined in the movie. So the way this data, the way they collected this data, it's presented in relative change, not absolute risk. So when you see, like, taglines 40% higher or 50% lower, these are statements of relative change. And while they are easy to understand, they are also incomplete. A relative change can dramatically exaggerate the underlying effect. It's a great way to scare people. And you know a little bit about that, right?
Yeah, so just talking about this study, this specific study, this is done by a 2015 World Health Organization study that found an association between red meat and colorectal cancer. So there's 50,000 people in this study, which sounds like a lot, so you'd think it'd be good information. Generally, the higher the number of people, the worse the study is, because it's an epidemiological study. Here's a survey, what'd you eat for the last 5 years? Okay, I'm believing that you're 100% honest and you remembered every single thing, you didn't lie, everything like that. And then from that, they found an 18% increased risk of cancer from eating processed meat, and a 2% increased risk from eating unprocessed red meat. 2% ain't shit, by the way.
No, not at all.
So saying that eating red meat causes cancer, 2% is nothing.
And I want to say these studies cannot show causation. So just the words you used, meat causes cancer, because that's the word they use.
Yeah.
You can't use that word with this data. They only show associations, not causation.
Yeah, well, I don't know how many times we repeated correlation doesn't show causation, and that's all they're doing. So the 18%, this is what it means, is that out of 100, 4.5 people were at risk of developing cancer. That 18% increase translated into 5.3. So if you round that to a solid number, it's 5 either way.
It's the same number twice.
It's nothing. That's not an increased risk. If you told me there's an 18% chance that when I go start my car, it's going to blow up, hey, that's scary. I'm never going to start my car again.
Never.
But when you show me that risk that it goes from a 4.5 to a 5.3, that means absolutely nothing to me.
Nothing at all. And it shouldn't to these people. And honestly, these researchers know that. They know that with these epidemiological data, you should really never take it to the next step, which is an actual trial, which is an actual experiment, unless that number is over 500%. And that number was 18%. You see how far off that is? And even 500%, mind you, does not show causation. It simply shows an association.
Yeah, the link between cigarettes and lung cancer is over 1,000 times.
Maybe we should look into that.
Yeah, that is an association that, like, hey, you should look into.
Yes.
18% is nothing.
No, it's nothing. And they know that, man. They really do.
And even saying that unprocessed red meat and processed meat, comparing those two, is not the same thing. Like, those are not, that's not a fair comparison.
It's not a fair comparison, no.
Because when you're processing meat, then you're adding, like, you're smoking foods, you're adding all sorts of other chemicals to them, and they're not just like red meat anymore. You're making it something completely different.
You are, yeah. And so that World Health Organization report, it actually cited 20 different studies as kind of evidence for this claim. And that was one of the epidemiological studies. And again, it's complete shit. It just is. So what they should do with these studies is talk about absolute risk. And that takes into account that minor change. And if they actually showed you the absolute risk, you would see that the difference is minuscule and you shouldn't worry about it. But if they're trying to get a headline, if they're trying to promote a breakthrough with a medicine, like, oh, this, you know, diabetes medicine dropped their blood sugar 40%. Then they're not going to show you the absolute risk or the absolute numbers, the absolute data. Because guess what? That number is way less impressive.
Yeah, so like the absolute is at 4.5 out of 100 to 5.3.
Yes. And the relative is what?
That 18%. So that's why, like, this stuff does matter. The way that the data is presented.
It really does matter. And there, no one really... First off, no one knows that. And no one cares enough to really look into the numbers, you know?
That's not something I learned in... Maybe I did learn that in school, but forgot about it.
Because they didn't really force how important it is.
Yeah, like, that's something that, like, I really learned looking at these studies, like, a lot closer.
Yes.
That's not something that everybody knows. I mean, even if you have a good college degree or anything, you still might not know that information. Like, you...
Exactly. 100%. I didn't know. I was not taught that in college at all. I went to a good school, and I got a hard degree, and no one mentioned that to me ever. So, I mean...
If they did, it was on a test one time and you forgot about it.
Exactly, yeah. Right? So honestly, yeah, this movie makes too many claims to cover in one podcast. So I just want to focus on the first big claim they made was that red meat causes cancer. And they associate red meat with processed meat. Like Tom said, they lump them into one group. Hey, so what? You want to do that? Fine. I'm going to go through your study and actually see what's going on with all this shit, right? So... it's a World Health Organization. I'm just going to say WHO from here on out. I don't want to keep saying World Health Organization because I'm going to say that shit 100 times. So, just initially, the WHO made the following irresponsible decisions. So, they cherry-picked studies that supported its anti-meat conclusions, ignoring those that showed either no connection between meat and cancer or even a protective effect of meat on colon cancer risk. The WHO relied heavily on dozens of epidemiological studies, which we just talked about, cannot show causation, can only show association, and to support their claim of meat causes cancer. The WHO cited mere 6 experimental studies suggesting a possible link between meat and colon cancer, four of which were conducted by the same research group. And let me tell you, this research group, oh, it's a doozy. It is the shittiest. I mean, I'm going to read you these studies. They will blow your mind how dumb they are. I mean, it'll blow your mind.
Well, already sounds like there's a pretty strong conflict of interest already.
For sure, yeah. So three of the six experimental studies were conducted solely on rats. And I just want to say this first, and guess people are confused. Rats are not humans. And maybe they're not, like, adapted for high meat diets. Maybe, maybe not, right? But either way, all rats in every study was injected with a powerful carcinogen prior to being fed meat. So are we stacking the deck one way?
It sounds like it.
Sure shit sounds like it, okay? Only three of the experimental studies were done on humans, and all were conducted with a very small number of subjects and were severely flawed in more way than one, which I'll go over. Also, some of the theories put forth by WHO about how red meat and processed meat might cause cancer are complete shit, and I'm going to bring it back around and how I can use their own argument to blame vegetables for it. And, oh, don't touch a sacred vegetable, right? Don't touch it, but trust me, I am. You'll see. It's just, it's crazy. And I really think some people, and this even got brought up to me, and we'll see what you think. They're like, who cares what the WHO says? Like, let them just report this. It's not that, who reads that paper? And I was like, you know what? It really does matter.
It's the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization. Yeah, they're pretty powerful.
It matters.
Yeah.
Just because, did I read that paper, that real shit paper, before like 10 days ago? No. I bet 10 people, nah, no, 1,000 people in the world have truly read this entire paper, even though it's not that long. But how many people have that term, like, red meat and cancer and bacon and cancer has kind of like seeped into the lexicon of just public knowledge.
And it has an impact on our food guidelines, our dietary yes. guidelines. Like, it does matter. It's pretty powerful.
It is. It's very powerful. So the fact that they did this is just, honestly, it's criminal. I really think it's criminal, but it is what it is. So bottom line, there is no good evidence that unprocessed red meat increases the risk of cancer. There's no good evidence at all. And something we've said a million times, and of course we just repeat ourselves, it makes no sense to blame an ancient food for a modern disease. Like, how does that make sense?
Yeah, cancer is, it's not new, but at the rates that it is, it's really new.
Yeah.
And us eating cows is not new.
Or is meat in general is not new. Yeah. Not new at all. So, let's go into some of the quote-unquote evidence the WHO used against meat. So, the WHO looked at over 800 epidemiological studies on red and processed meat and cancer of all kinds. Of the 16 types of cancer explored, the WHO chose to base its doomsday decree solely on studies of colon cancer only. And that was a little red flag for me, because I do know a thing or two about cancer, and it seems like they cherry-picked their data even further, because they can only find data that they can manipulate to show cancer with the colon and nowhere else. Does that seem a little fishy to you, a little bit?
Well, if red meat is it showing an increased risk of cancer, it should show an increased risk of multiple types of cancer.
Right? Exactly. You're eating it, why not esophageal cancer? It's in your stomach, why not stomach cancer? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Cancer is caused by mitochondrial dysfunction. We've talked about it in the past. We will talk about it in the future 100%, but if you really want to know more, look up a guy named Thomas Seyfried. He's a stud. Read the book, Tripping Over the Truth. Very powerful book.
And if you're a really big nerd, he has like a textbook on it. I think it's called The Metabolic Theory of Cancer.
It is. I think it's like, what is it, like $200, $300?
Yeah, I'm going to get it this year for Christmas.
That's so cool. Then I can get it. You'll just let me borrow it.
Well, it's probably going to take me a long time to go through.
Yeah.
It's true. A legit textbook. Like, it's like 1,000 pages long.
Yeah, but that's cool. Yeah, that's a good Christmas. I should ask for that, actually. Yeah. So, of these 800 epidemiological studies, a mere 29 were put forth by the WHO as informative about the connection between unprocessed red meat and colon cancer. Now, check this. Of those 29 studies, 14 suggested that red meat was associated with a higher risk for colon cancer. 15 did not. So already, your data is cut in half.
So one thing that we've mentioned is you like where there's correlation, that doesn't always suggest causation. But there where there is no correlation, that means there's no causation.
Yeah, you can't go backwards.
So like there's a strong correlation between smoking cigarettes and lung cancer. Maybe those don't cause each other, but hey, there's a strong enough evidence. But if there was like the opposite of that, the less cigarettes you smoke and then the higher rates of lung cancer, then it's like, okay, cigarettes can't cause lung cancer.
Yes.
But that's obviously not true.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, I'm glad you said that. That's such a great little detail that obviously these people with these reports did not care about. You see what I'm saying? So the evidence or the epidemiological evidence against processed meat and cancer. And when we say processed meat, they're talking about bacon, sausage.
Like lunch meat, deli meat.
Yeah, lunch meat, deli meat, yeah. So with that, they chose 27 studies. Of those 27, 18 suggested processed meat was associated with a higher risk of colon cancer, and 9 did not. And again, your point, if you get a couple studies showing there is no association, guess what? There's no causation.
Well, especially if it's either half of your data or one-third of your data showing none. And then the ones that are showing it only result in either a 2% increase or an 18% increase. Yeah, that's nothing.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
That's literally nothing. So yeah, I guess just to sum it up, the WHO considered over 1,800, that would be, I guess, more impressive, 800 epidemiological studies regarding red and processed meat and cancer. They based their findings on 56 studies relating to colon cancer. Of the red meat studies, more than half found no link between red meat and cancer. Of the processed meat studies, 9 were negative and 18 were positive. And like we said, those studies can't prove anything. They can just give you kind of an insight onto the next study to perform.
Yeah, after you do find some sort of correlation, then you go into your randomized control studies and try to find some sort of mechanism going on there.
Yes.
Did that happen?
Did not happen. So I'm going to go through. So like I said, that World Health Organization paper from 2015, and I am going to link it on the website so you can read that trash if you really want. 6 of them were actually studies worth, like actual experimental studies. So 14 were epidemiological, 6 were actual studies. Guess what? I'm not even looking at the epidemiological studies because they're shit. Okay, you can't prove anything with them anyway, so why even look at them? I don't got enough time in the day or enough breath to yell about how crappy they are, okay? Yeah, so 4 of these studies were done on the same research group, or with the same research group, which is horrible. And I kind of, this reminded me reading through this, we talked about on that Q&A podcast with the vegan powerlifting show, or powerlifting, James Cameron vegan movie?
Game Changers.
And how this one powerlifter says he has a world record in like the deadlift when it's really not impressive.
Yeah.
And we talked about how there's so many damn powerlifting federations. A lot of people have world records that are shit. Guess what? It ain't hard to get a little research group together to submit data to a scientific website. Me and you could create a little lab, get a couple mice, inject this one, write up a paper. As long as we follow the guidelines, we could submit a paper.
And then usually they're going to be peer-reviewed. You generally get to pick which peers are going to review it. So you find like-minded individuals. You send it to them. They all approve it because they think the same as you. And there you go.
There you go. They're done. All right. So it's just crazy. It really is. So I'm going to go through all 6 of the studies done that the WHO cited as evidence for their big claim. So study 1 is red meat in rats, and the purpose of this study was to determine whether heme, and that's what makes red meat red, it's like the iron-containing compound in red meat, might be the cancer-causing ingredient within meat. The scientists designed an experiment comparing low heme meats, like chicken, to high heme meats, like blood sausage. So step 1, inject the rats with a powerful carcinogen. Yes, that's what they do. Step 1, inject the rats with something that causes cancer. Step 2, remove most of the calcium from the rat's chow because calcium protects cells against heme. Again, stacking the deck, but okay, that's cool. Step 3, feed the rats 60% freeze-dried meat containing skinless chicken or lean beef or low-fat pork blood sausage. And of course, a blood sausage is going to be the high heme like variant. And they do that for 100 days. And 100 days is approximately 10 years for a rat study. And if you're wondering why most people do, or most everyone, does studies on rats, that's why. After 100 days, they can get a 10-year sample. We can't do... How much money would it cost to do a 10-year human, like, double-blind trial? Millions, right?
Millions, tens of millions, maybe even more than that.
Right.
And then you run into, like, ethics and stuff like that. Yeah. You couldn't do a cancer study like this on people.
You couldn't, yeah.
Especially feeding them that type of crap meat.
And see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is why rats are done, pretty much. That's why everyone uses rats. But, So
were any of those red meat?
Oh, yeah. The third one was lean beef.
Okay.
So that's just, that's actually a good catch. So it's skinless chicken, low heme, lean beef, moderate heme, and then the blood sausage, high heme.
Okay.
So, yeah, red meat was in there. I wish it wasn't, because that would have been an even better catch.
Because that was their claim, is that it's red meat, yeah. Specifically.
So... All rats, these are the results, including the chicken-fed rats, which was a low-heme sample, developed potentially precancerous changes in the colon. The more heme the meat contained, the stronger the effect was. None of the rats actually developed cancer. Say that again. None of the rats actually developed cancer. And these results... would seem to suggest that skinless white chicken can cause potentially cancerous lesions, which is not what the researchers wanted to find. So they went back and examined the chicken chow more closely and found that the chicken chow contained more arachidonic acid, which is an omega-6 pro-inflammatory fat, and toxic levels of niacin compared to the other chows. And they decided to blame these differences for the unwanted results. They never went back to test these theories. There is no way to know whether the arachidonic acid or niacin were to blame, and they did not go back and subject the beef or sausage chows to the additional scrutiny. And again, presumably because they got the answer they wanted. You know what I'm saying? They manipulated the data post-experiment again.
Yeah, why would you want a different result? You already got what you wanted.
Exactly. Leave it as is. So what can you really get from this study? What's the translation with all that BS? So if you inject yourself with a powerful carcinogen... then eat a calcium-deficient powdered chicken, beef, or pork diet every day for 10 years, and you are a rat, your colon may start to look funny. We don't know whether or not you would eventually develop cancer. That's what your conclusion should be if you're an actual upright, like, stand-up lab. That's all you can draw from that.
And that meat isn't what normal people would be eating.
At all.
That's not healthy meat. I don't eat chicken breast. I don't remember the last time I had a chicken breast.
Well, I don't even care if you did eat chicken breast. It's just the whole setup is just crazy. But what they claim is not what their data showed. Right?
Yeah, that's heavily flawed.
Heavily flawed. It gets worse. Okay. So study two, again, red meat and rats, by this same research group. So this experiment simply builds upon the findings of those in the above experiment by adding calcium back into the 60% meat chow, showing that it completely protects against potentially precancerous lesions. So the authors concluded, the results support the concept that toxicity associated with the excess of a useful nutrient may be preventative by another nutrient. Okay, bro. That's just some bullshit you're just saying from a previous study that was bullshit to begin with. And that is one of the citations by the World Health Organization. That is one of their claims of evidence to make the claim that red meat causes cancer.
That the introduction to calcium lowers the risk?
The results support the concept that toxicity associated with the excess of a useful nutrient, calcium, may be preventative by another nutrient, heme. Okay, whatever. Is that just some BS, like, fast talk just to make some claim? Sure is. So, what the translation? Adequate dietary calcium prevents your colon from looking funny if you find yourself in the unfortunate circumstances of the first experiment.
Yeah, I mean, that's still not very relevant to anybody I know.
Exactly. This is, like, the weakest shit ever. It really is. And this is actually good. So, what the World Health Organization... like, they offer three theories about how meat might cause cancer. And I know you've heard these. So, theory one is that processing meat leads to the formation of N-nitroso compounds, which may cause cancer. You've heard, like, processing promotes these compounds. You've heard of, like, cyclic carbon, aromatic hydrocarbons, all that bullshit, right?
Yeah.
This is what we're talking about. This is what comes up with processing, right? So, one of the most processed meats you can have is bacon, right? So, this theory is saying that the processing of meat forms these things, which it does, and they may cause cancer. So, what if I told you, even in these things, they cited a study that showed the exact opposite?
So let me know a little bit more about that.
Yeah, let me read this to you. Let me pull this up. So this is a study on, God, I'm not even going to read the whole title of it because it's too long, but they fed a bunch of rats bacon, okay? Plain bacon, here we go, and they tested for cancer. And this is actually a good study. I'm going to put it on the website so you can actually read through it if you want. So they measured the cancer by a marker called ACF. So here's a quote. No ACF were detected in the colon of bacon-fed uninitiated rats. So uninitiated rats were not given that carcinogen that all rats seem to be given on these damn cancer studies. So after the injection of the carcinogen, unprocessed but cooked meat diets, cooked meat-based diets, did not change the number of ACF, nor the ACF multiplicity compared with controlled rats. Here's the kicker. In contrast, the bacon-based diet consistently reduced the number of large ACF per rat, and the ACF multiplicity in the three promotion studies by 12, 17, and 20%. Results suggest that NOC, which is that compound nitro, I forget how to pronounce it now, but that shit from processing, brought by dietary bacon would not enhance colon cancer in rats. So a study showing the exact opposite.
So processing meat doesn't show any higher risk.
Sure doesn't. Zero. That's crazy to me that this is the shit that they're saying causes it.
Yeah, that's pretty strong right there.
That is very strong. So here's another one. So theory two, they say when meat is cooked at high temperatures, compounds called heterocyclic amines are formed. And that's pretty similar to the things prior. They're just compounds that come from processing, like heat, pressure, stuff like that. The only problem, you get those when you actually cook chicken breast as well, or white fish. And no one's talking about chicken breast and white fish causing cancer. No one's saying that.
No, the study specifically said red meat.
Red meat. Okay, but that shit in chicken breast and fish doesn't count? Okay.
I guess it's a different amino acids, different protein. I don't know what their claim would be.
Sure. Their claim would be shit. That's what it would be. So, the third claim is about PAHs. So it's polycystic aromatic. Actually, I'm going to pronounce that wrong. Let me read this again. So it is. Yeah, no. Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. Again, these are just compounds from processing, right? And just like when you hear. Have you heard the stuff that charred meat causes cancer?
I know what you're talking about. I just don't remember the name of it.
Okay, so that's what they're talking about, right? They're talking about the PAHs. So when you char something, like the little black parts, like, oh, that causes cancer, scrape that off. Not really, bro. So in case you were wondering, all charred, smoked, baked, and toasted foods contain these PAHs, including grilled vegetables, breads, and cereals. In fact, breads and cereals contribute the highest amount of PAHs to the average person's diet. Not talking about that.
Well, one thing that I've always thought of when it comes to that is, so we've been cooking meat for at least 100,000 years or so.
Yeah, eating it for millions.
So we haven't had barbecues for that long. We haven't had, like, control flames. So I'm pretty sure that they would just stick a fucking hunk of meat in a fire and that thing would come out charred.
Yeah, come out black.
Yeah, like, I don't think that they were really, like, rotisserieing that, had, like, a steady flame or had an oven or, like, some sort of control heating system. So I'm pretty sure we've been eating charred meat for like 100,000 years or so.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Yeah, since the beginning.
Yeah, so like I don't understand why that would cause cancer now when we haven't had cancer rates that high up until now.
Yep, no, that's a great point.
We should have been having that all throughout our human existence.
Exactly, yeah. And I don't want to come off like I'm saying PAHs or polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons cause cancer. Because I don't think they do. But if you want to talk about them in meat, you have to talk about them in vegetables and bread. You have to. And no one ever does.
And it's pretty easy to make bread black. Like, you just toast it for a little too long.
Yep. So I pulled up the citation that I've actually used for this, and I'm just going to read a few quotes from it because I think it's pretty good. So, polycystic aromatic hydrocarbons are found ubiquitously not only in all different environmental media, such as air, soil, and water, but in also various foods we encounter in our everyday life. Such risk is associated with all common dietary components such as vegetables, cereals, oils, and open flame cooked meats.
So that's basically saying that if you burn meat, it's the same thing as burning bread versus burning vegetables.
Yeah, and we shouldn't say burning, it's just processing. So even your bread that's been already cooked, like your whole wheat bread, they're in that bread already. So the heat from processing causes them.
So just exposing anything to high heat?
Yes, exactly. That's it. And they're in the soil, and they're in the air. They come out of the car's exhaust pipe. We're exposing these all the time. But we don't talk about that. We only talk about them coming from meat. That's what really, really gets under my nerves. Like, it just does. So those were the three theories that the World Health Organization proposed. They're all shit. They all suck. They really do. Study 3 of the 6, again, by the same group, attempts to understand which aspect of meat processing might be responsible for causing potentially precancerous changes in rat colons. Is it the cooking temperature, the curing method, the type of packaging? They tested a few different things. The type of processed meat that caused the worst precancerous changes was a dark meat that had been cured with sodium nitrite, cooked at the highest temperature, left unwrapped in the fridge for 5 days. And none of the rats they studied this on developed cancer. So what can you really get from this study? What's the translation? If you inject yourself with a powerful carcinogen, then eat a calcium-deficient diet, a high-sugar diet containing badly packaged cooked ham every day for 10 years, and you are a rat, your colon may start to look funny. And we still don't know if you eventually develop cancer or not. Mind you, this is the evidence cited by the World Health Organization claiming meat causes cancer. It's complete crap. This is study 4, and this is actually processed meat in rats and humans. This is done by the same shitty group as before. So in this study, the researchers fed the aforementioned badly packaged ham, that shit that's been left out in the days or unopened in the fridge for 5 days, not just the rats, but they fed it to a handful of humans as well. So they had 17 healthy men eat 6.3 ounces of the badly packaged ham every day for 4 days. Their urine and stool were then tested for 5 different cancer biomarkers to see, you know, did any of these rise. After eating the ham, 2 of the biomarkers had increased, 2 other biomarkers were unaffected, and the 5th biomarker had actually went in a positive direction. But hold on. But 2 of them went in the rat direction. That has to be a problem. But no, the biomarkers they used were actually shit. So ATNC and T-bars. I'm not going to go into it too much because it's way too complicated. But of course, the markers they use are completely flawed. And they're not generally accepted as good markers for cancer, but that's what they use to show that this study caused cancers in humans. And we both know that cancer is not really a genetic problem anyways. You know what I mean?
No, not at all. So that's 4 out of them, right?
Yep.
Yeah, 2 more?
2 more. So, yeah, translation for that, if you eat 6 ounces of badly packaged ham for 4 days in a row, your urine and stool might be higher in 2 substances that have no proven connection to cancer. Like, whoop-de-doo. Go ahead. Study 5. Red meat in humans. And this one is actually done by a different research group. So, I still don't agree with it, but it is what it is. So, the author of this study tried to show that unprocessed red meat caused mutations in human colon cells. 23 people were asked to include 10 ounces per day of lean red meat plus 2 cups of orange juice or low-fat milk with their diets for 4 weeks. They underwent rectal biopsies, which showed a 21% increase in the number of mutations of a particular type of, this is a problem with science. All these terms are so complicated, it turns people off. Even as I read them, I don't want to say them because I know people are going to tune out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I already know it, but...
Just use abbreviations.
Yeah, so it's just 06-MEG addux. That's what it's called. So that's what showed a 20% increase in these mutations. And that might sound kind of scary, I get it, but our body has perfectly developed enzymes to handle these mutations. It's not a problem. Like, it's not a problem at all. The translation for this study is if you include 10 ounces of lean beef or lamb plus 2 cups of milk or orange juice in your usual diet every day for a month, biopsies of your rectum will show a 21% increase in the usual number of mutations in your colon cells. We do not know whether it was red meat, orange juice, milk, higher protein intake, lower fiber intake, or some other aspect of the diet that led to the increase in the mutation rate. These mutations are typically automatically repaired by the body and do not increase your risk of cancer. And that should be the kicker. These mutations do not increase your risk for cancer. And yet, this is one of the claims that the WHO uses for their claim.
And there are too many variables, like you said.
They didn't control for anything.
You said they increased the red meat and they increased orange juice. So how do you know which one it is?
And milk.
Yeah, there's no way you can tell. Like, oh, it could be the milk, it could be the orange juice, it could be the red meat.
Or any of the other meals you ate throughout the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, this is why human trials are so expensive. We can't keep these people in a ward because it just costs so much. So the last study that they mentioned was just red meat in humans. This is by a different group, so I guess that's a good thing. So the purpose of this study was to just demonstrate the effects of red meat and fiber on colon mutations in humans. 25 people were confined to a metabolic ward and fed one of three diets: a vegetarian diet, a low fiber diet containing 14.8 ounces of red meat per day, and a high fiber diet containing 14.8 ounces of red meat per day. So far, you're liking this study a little bit more, right? It seems a little more controlled. We're in a ward, stuff like that.
You got three different studies, or three different diets. It seems better.
It seems controlled. You know what I'm saying? So after 10 days, stool samples were tested for cancer biomarkers ATNC, which is very similar to that old biomarker, the 06CMG we talked about earlier. So the low-fiber red meat diet resulted in higher numbers of that 06CMG mutations than the vegetarian diet, as well as higher ATNCs. And should we worry? No. Like, as we talked about earlier, those mutations are going to get repaired easy, 100%.
And 10 days isn't very long.
Not at all. That's not enough time for your body to get adapted to any sort of dietary change.
Your gut microbiome hasn't had time to fully adapt. Your body isn't used to producing enough digestive enzymes to adapt to that type of new diet. So 10 days isn't anything.
It's not anything, yeah. So what can we get from this diet, from this study? The translation is, if you eat a low-fiber, high-protein, high-refined carbohydrate diet that includes 14.8 ounces of lean beef or lamb for 10 days, your colon cells will experience more mutations than usual. We have no idea what aspect of this diet is responsible for the increasing mutation rates. These mutations are typically automatically repaired by the body and should not increase your risk of cancer. Oh yeah, and a little aspect of this study, if one of the participants started to lose weight, they would feed them buttered, jellied bread to make them gain weight.
So something extremely high in sugar.
High in sugar, yeah. So that's just a little wrinkle as well. So those are the six things that the WHO use as evidence. And so when you get right down to it, the only plausible evidence to suggest that red meat might be risky to human colon health is contained in two human studies, both of which were very small and poorly designed and therefore unable to give us useful information about the effects of red meat on cancer risk. These studies are inconclusive at best and worthless at worst. And I would say dangerous at worst.
Well, so you can do something with those studies. I wouldn't say they're worthless, but they're worthless to be making claims off of.
Yeah.
If you want to design another study to take a closer look at them, that's perfectly fine. There's enough data there. I wouldn't invest money into it. I don't think it's worth it. But I could see why you might want to take a closer look at that. But that's all you can do with it. You can't make a claim. And you can't make a claim and then put that on TV and swear that to millions of people.
Worldwide.
That's dangerous.
That is dangerous. Yes, that's a very good point. So yeah, man, that's all the evidence they had. That's all the evidence that What the Health had to make their grand claim that meat causes cancer. And when they talk about it like it is a scientific fact that we all know meat causes cancer. And that's their evidence. The evidence sucks.
Yeah, and just, so most of it's based off of epidemiological studies, and there's so much problems with those type of studies. So with that, you're not factoring for a bunch of other things. So there's definitely healthy yields of rice. We've been told all our lives that being a vegetarian is good, eating meat is bad. And then also making a distinction between processed meat and just normal red meat. Like, hey, if you're poor, you're probably eating a lot more processed red meat and a lot less T-bones.
Yep.
So, like, there's a money factor there, too. And then also, if you're a vegetarian, you're much more likely to be exercising, not drinking alcohol, not smoking cigarettes. Just, you probably care about your health. I don't know that many vegetarians that are vegetarians by choice and don't care about their health.
Exactly.
Like, they're living that healthy lifestyle.
And that healthy user bias translates into meat eaters as well. Because what's, like, the typical healthy meat choice?
Chicken or fish.
Nice, white, clean chicken breast or some, like, tilapia, right? So that's why they're not associated with these epidemiological studies. That's a healthy user bias right there.
Yeah, and then just going into, like, the economical aspect of it. Like, so if you're poor, you're more likely to be eating that processed meat because it's a lot cheaper. You're also going to be a lot more likely to be consuming, like, Kool-Aids, like that high fructose corn syrup, a lot of just cheap, highly processed foods. Like, if you're buying processed meat, I'm willing to bet everything else in your diet is going to be highly processed too.
For sure.
So you can't really make that claim that processed meat causes it, because you're probably consuming 80% of your food that's processed. The only thing that you're consuming that's not processed is probably the water you're drinking.
That's a very good point. Yeah, it's a very good point. And of course, me and you know there's nothing wrong with eating bacon, right?
Oh, I eat it almost every day.
Right? Nothing wrong with eating bacon at all. Feel free to eat it. Do not feel bad. It is extremely healthy. And I would make the claim right now that any bacon you eat is healthier than any vegetable you eat. 100%. And fight me on that. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, you even with like the processing, the curing methods that they do, which are supposedly dangerous, you just went through it and they're very inconclusive at the moment.
Yeah, and that's putting it lightly.
Yeah.
Like, this shit that happens from processing is everywhere.
So one thing that we didn't really talk about with that whole epidemiological study that set it all off, that 800 people study. So vegetarians have a 4.5 risk of developing colorectal cancer. People eating highly processed meat have a 5.3 risk. That's at 18%. So vegetarians have damn near the same risk as people eating a highly processed diet. So if you're a vegetarian, you're probably not eating anything processed or very minimal versus somebody that's eating 80% plus processed. Can't really make those claims.
You cannot make those claims.
Especially when it's such a small difference.
Yep. Such a small, insignificant difference. And it's just these little nuances. It's these little changes that really matter that no one cares about, or no one has the time to care about it. You see what I'm saying? Like, what did you do this weekend? You did 20 things this weekend. You didn't have time to read papers. You don't have time to do this. Just think if your life was like that every day. Because a lot of people are like that.
Oh, it's so easy to, hey, let me just sit down, watch an hour and a half documentary, and let these doctors and their white coats tell me the truth about health. Yes. That's easy to do.
It is. And it's quick, and it's just, it took me longer probably to read these papers and digest them than to watch a movie.
Yeah, I mean, and it's sad, and it's like, that's the problem with documentaries, is they don't show the other side of the argument, because they definitely have an agenda, and they're not digging through the science and showing you the healthy user bias,
yep,
the possible conflicts of interest involved, anything like that.
Yeah, like for the magic pill, they have a whole section on, they damn like feedlots for cows, and I understand that's like a hot term nowadays, like grain-fed, grass-fed, all that stuff. But we did a whole podcast on the difference between grain-fed and grass-fed. It's not that big, you know? And it's just documentaries, like you said, they can't do everything in an hour and a half.
And one thing I don't get is why cows get the short end of the stick when it comes to that. Like that factory farming. Like, oh, I don't eat red meat because of that. Well, it's like, okay, chickens are way more factory farmed than cows. Because at least cows live a large percentage of their life naturally. Like, chicken that you buy in the store is never, like, natural.
No, it's, like, never even outside.
Yeah, so, like, how is that not, like, brought up in these arguments? Or, like, farm fish, farm-raised fish. Pigs are a lot worse than cows, too. Cows have the worst reputation, but yet they're treated by far the best when it comes to, like, the traditional meat sources.
By far the best. If, like, animal welfare and animal, like, happiness is something that you really care about, support the cow industry because they're doing it right. The pigs, the chickens, and, like you said, the farm fish, that's when it can get a little sad if you look into it, but there is a reality at stake that there's over 7 billion of us, and we gotta, there's some corners that are gonna have to be cut, and that's kind of sad, but it is what it is. It's not the cows.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, even if, I know we've talked about this, like, monocropping is horrible for our environment, too. That's removing an entire habitat. So you're killing a bunch of species, the future of that species as well.
Yep.
And just also with all the pesticides that they're spraying, and when they harvest all their crops, you're still killing a bunch of insects and small animals, too.
Yeah, but they're not cute or cuddly.
Yeah.
So I guess we don't care about them.
And those animals aren't being used for anything that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
The ones that get cut up in the combine, I don't think we're eating those.
No. They're just used to support that whole ecosystem when it's in a natural habitat. But, you know, besides that. So, yeah. So that's my first rebuttal of what the health. And I don't know if I want to do another one of these. What do you think?
You just said that there's too many.
37.
I don't think it's really worth it.
Because guess what? The argument is going to go the exact same way. I'll look into their claim and then their evidence, and it'll be 20 epidemiological shit, 2 studies that are complete crap.
And they're looking at, does it, not that it causes cancer, does it cause this biomarker that we think causes cancer?
Maybe.
Possibly. So it's very, very shaky evidence. There's a lot of holes and gaps that need to be filled there. So I'm sure the heart disease one is going to be this causes an increase in cholesterol,
yeah.
Therefore it causes heart disease. And we already went through how cholesterol and heart disease are not very connected at all.
No.
There's not a very strong correlation there at all. Mm. So, yeah, I don't think it's really worth it.
Okay, good. I don't want to do it, because actually doing this was very frustrating for me, because I know people buy that shit hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, I know. I just saw one of my friends from college posted this very long post on Facebook about how, like, if you have cancer, you need to go vegetarian. And one of the things is, he also cites that sugar feeds cancer. Well, there's very little sugar in meat. So, hey, that's a great option.
Yeah.
Do you know what there is sugar in? Every single plant you consume is going to get broken down into sugar. So, I don't really see how you can say, like, hey, avoid this that contains very little sugar, but eat a lot of this, which all of it's going to contain some sort of sugar. And also most likely be sprayed in some sort of pesticide that does show some sort of high risk of cancer.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did you tell him about that?
I didn't want to get into that.
Yeah, it's a hard conversation to have. It really is.
And the whole alkalizing effect of plants, there is no alkalizing effect of plants. No. That's why we have a stomach and we produce acid in our stomach. That's going to balance it out.
Yeah, it's all we breathe. Like, getting rid of CO2 gets rid of acid. But that keeps everything kind of in a similar pH range. So, something I say, I think it's funny. If you really want your blood to become acidic, don't worry about steak. Just hold your breath. Okay? You'll get acidic real quick. So, maybe we should do a podcast on that. The whole alkaline argument.
I don't think it's very strong. I mean, we could.
It's not strong at all. But at least it's something we could direct people towards when that argument comes up.
I guess we can. I mean, I could kind of, like, summarize it in, like, one sentence.
Just no?
Well, pretty much, they think that having alkalizing foods is good for cancer because cancer thrives in an acidic environment. And it's not that it thrives in an acidic environment, it's that it's creating an acidic environment. So we've talked about this a million times, that cancerous cells are fermenters. They ferment either glucose or glutamine and create lactic acid as a byproduct. Lactic acid creates acid. So, hey, you can eat all the alkalizing foods you want. It's not going to do anything because the cancerous cells are creating that acid environment.
I love how dumb that makes these people sound. But they just don't know what's going on.
No, they heard that somewhere, so they just repeat it.
Yeah.
But, like, if you actually kind of, like, look at the mechanisms in place, it doesn't make any damn sense.
Doesn't make any sense at all. Yeah. And I feel that way so often when people especially bring up what the health to me or just some, like, crazy claims. And I'm like, you don't even understand how dumb the shit you're telling me is. But they did this. Ignorance is a trip, you know?
Yeah.
It really is.
And unfortunately, like, so many loud voices. I mean, it's not like What the Health is the only one spreading this.
That's true.
Like, bullshit health advice. Like, there's a lot of other ones out there.
That's true. Yeah. And it's sad, man. It really is. But it is what it is. So I think, yeah, I think we covered it pretty good. Did you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, it's completely off topic. Not related to cancer at all.
That's fine.
So I'm reading this book. It's called Born to Run. And it basically just kind of, like, looks at how we're, like, born to be runners. Their, like, hypothesis on why, like, Homo sapiens, like, became the dominant species and Neanderthals, like, pretty much went extinct or bred with humans. Like, that's kind of, like, what happened.
Yeah, we really don't know, right?
Yeah, and yeah. It depends on what part of the world you're from.
Yeah.
It's because Homo sapiens are taller, leaner, which made us better endurance runners. So before we had tools and everything like that, we were able to, like, stalk a deer for, like, 4 hours. And, like, eventually that deer would just pass out from exhaustion, and then we'd walk up and hit it with a rock.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty much their, like, theory on that.
Because they could outrun us for 30 minutes easily.
Yeah, but since we're standing upright, we can breathe a lot better, which makes us the best endurance athletes on the planet. So, like, deers are hunched over. They can't really breathe very well while they're running. So I'm pretty sure everybody that's out there knows this. When you're tired, you don't bend over and put your hands on your knees. You stand up straight. Good air is up top. I don't know if you've heard that before, but it's how you breathe in to catch your breath. So deer can't do that. We can. So that makes us better endurance athletes. So that's just kind of like why they just kind of go into that. And just how, like, our footwear has changed so much. So naturally, they would have, our Homo sapiens ancestors would have nothing on their feet.
No.
But today, if you go to, like, a trail race, like the one I'm about to go to, you should see the shoes people are wearing.
Fancy?
They have, like, the thickest soles. They're, like, 2 inches thick. Jeez. Like, trail running shoes look ridiculous.
Okay.
They're the biggest shoes that you'll ever see.
Like moon shoes?
Yeah. Like, honestly, if I was trying to impress a girl to be a little bit taller, like, those are the shoes I'd want to wear.
Got it.
So it's a lot of, like, this kind of that type of stuff. The complete opposite of what our ancestors would have been doing. So the problem with wearing, like, a shoe that's that thick is you do have so much cushion. So what that does is it gives you so much, like, room for air, because you're not going to feel it. You have all this cushion. So you could have the worst, like, biomechanics, and you're not going to be able to tell until you have an overuse injury, basically. Mm-hmm. But if you're, like, running barefoot or, like, some minimal shoes, you're going to be able to tell right away that you're running fucked up, because you're not, that first, like, first 10 steps,
your feet will hurt.
They'll start hurting. So you need to correct that really quick. So those, like, high expensive, like, cushion shoes give you a lot more room for air, which is a bad thing. That's why so many runners have bad knees, bad hips, bad feet. Because, hey, like, honestly, humans wouldn't have been able to last so long unless they were able to run and run their entire damn lives.
Yep.
So my suggestion, my tip of the week, is to switch over to, like, a more minimalist shoe. Now, obviously, if you're one of those people that has those, like, 3-inch heel shoes, it's probably a bad idea for you to switch to, like, those Vibrams, those, like, sock shoe, or like those toe shoes.
Yeah,
probably a bad idea to that big of a jump.
Gradual.
Yeah, do a gradual jump. So I've been doing that recently. I've already been working on that before I read this book, but this book's definitely making me want to switch to that way. I'm not going to do it this year because I'm already so far into training. I don't want to take a big step back to do that, but I've already been doing this already. Is when I walk my dogs to the dog park, I walk them in sandals, take off my sandals, and run around the dog park barefoot.
Smart.
Strengthening my feet that way, getting them more used to a more minimalist shoe. And the shoes that I'm wearing are, I'm damn near barefoot compared to everybody else out there that I see.
They're already pretty thin.
Yeah, they're not the Nike Flex, which is just like one of the cheaper running shoes. Mm. And the next ones I go to are going to be the Free Runs, which are very minimalist. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I'm either going to go to some Vibrams, or there's, like, some Zero shoes. There's a couple brand shoes that have, like, very minimalist.
Yeah.
Basically, it's just a piece of, like, rubber, mm-hmm, to protect your feet from getting, like scratched up and, like, cut up.
Yeah.
So, like, that's my plan for next year. I'm going to do that gradually. But that's what I suggest. Like, hey, if you're having feet problems or knee problems or anything like that, a good place to look at is your shoe. And one of the studies that they show is there's actually a pretty strong correlation between the more expensive shoes you have and the higher risk of injury.
Really?
So the more, like, expensive shoes, the more protection that you're getting, the more likely you are to be injured. Mm. And they also cite this evidence, too, is that we've been spending so much more money on shoes than at any other point in like the history of like America or mankind. So do you think like running related injuries has gone down?
It should, if that's correct, like connected.
Flat. No change in difference.
Okay.
So those $500 running shoes that you get that are like perfectly fit for your shoe, are perfectly fit for your foot, don't mean shit.
Man.
Like, you're better off just buying some Payless shoes that are going to fall apart. Because, hey, if you don't have support, then you've got to make sure your body mechanics are right.
Yeah. Man, that's such a great tip of the week. Yeah, I'm not a runner, but I have thought about minimalist shoes. Just from the evolutionary standpoint, that walking around with these, like, big-ass boots all day is not normal.
No, not at all. And you know? I know we talked about this, I mean, it was probably like a year ago. It was probably in the first couple of podcasts that you were really trying to strengthen your feet.
Mm-hmm. I was training barefoot for a long time.
Are you still doing that?
Sure not.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Actually, I'm not even training at all right now. I haven't trained in like 2 weeks. But, I'm not. Yeah, I got away from that. And it's actually, I got away from it because it was uncomfortable and because it hurt my feet. Like, you know how it is when you're in a gym. You roll around weights with your feet.
Yeah.
You never bend over and pick up all these damn weights because it's just a hassle, you know? So you roll around these weights with bare feet, it hurts. And so that's how I kind of got rid of it, or got away from it.
Yeah, when I'm at home, when I train at home, I'm always training barefoot. But like when I go to the gym, obviously you can't do that.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is after my 100K, if I do that, depending on how this 50K goes, mm-hmm. After that, I'm going to buy some like minimalist shoes, start walking around in those, get used to them, and then start slowly starting my training again sometime in January. Like between mid-October to January, I don't plan on doing any running, any lifting, pretty much just like some yoga and some walking, give my body like a really big rest.
See, you're way better at this whole gradual shit than me. Like I went from the biggest shoes to no shoes right away. And I was like, oh, my feet hurt. Screw this. Yeah. Like, well, no shit, your feet aren't hurt, bro. You know, I needed to maybe like one day a week and then 2 days a week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, do a baby steps.
I don't know. I'm not good at the whole baby step thing. I don't know why.
You gotta walk before you can run. You can't just go into a full sprint.
I know. I'm just dumb, I guess. But, no, that's a really good tip of the week. I really like that. So, yeah, that's a whole podcast done in the books. I hope I convinced you that that movie is trash. The evidence in that movie is trash. And don't listen to it, please. And, yeah, you can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. So if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to reach out anytime. And remember, we recently put the donate button on our homepage. So on TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. So if you want to show some support, feel free to do it. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you're not in a position to support us financially, please show your support another way. You can rate and review on any of your favorite podcast providers. It really does a lot for us. And so it shows how we're doing. If you like it, leave us a positive review. If you don't like it, please give us some constructive criticism. We've heard a lot of people think that we're just the same person because we sound the same.
Yeah.
Like somebody with, not schizophrenia, split personality disorder.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're two separate people. So if you have a hard time telling us apart, just, you know, please let us know. We'll try to do better about that.
But legit, we've known each other over 30 years. We're going to use some of the similar words.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you can rate and review your favorite podcast provider. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, newly Stitcher, and YouTube. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.